Strap on your bibs, children. It's time for mommy to feed you. But because this is the Femme Fatale podcast, I will not be filling your tummies with eggs and bakey. Sorry, go listen to the Splendid Table for that. Instead, this podcast feeds your head with inside info about Hollywood and the inner workings of the entertainment industry by answering questions that you yourselves write to me. And bonus, my podcast has just about as many calories as a typical Starlet's Power Lunch. It's a win-win. This week's three answers, I guarantee, will blow your mind at least once, maybe twice. I mean, if they blow your mind like three times, then you're probably a little naive, but once, definitely. Because I know my own intellect was kind of taken aback by the interview I'm going to share in just a few minutes. Somebody wrote in asking how and why songs by the likes of Katy Perry and Lady Gaga are getting leaked. And the answers, especially the why part, caught me off guard. Because if you do not believe that a hacker would steal a whole unreleased album and threaten to release it early just so he can get an autographed photo of an artist, then you do not know hackers and leakers, my friend. Yes, that has happened. All that and more coming up, such as it would seem that Ben Affleck plus Batman casting equals a whole lot of what the freak among my listenership. And those poor robots from Pacific Rim. If you didn't see Pacific Rim earlier this summer, you missed a whole lot of giant robots slamming Kotaku-style monsters with weapons such as battleships, and yet it bombed at the box office. A listener asks whether the marketing was to blame, and if so, how a multi-million-dollar marketing budget could possibly fail, because nothing that costs, say, $80 million can possibly ever be bad, right? Oh, children, really? But before we get to all that, please welcome Kelly Lynch, she of the sprawling Spin Media empire, back in the co-host's chair. Say hello!
Oh, hello, it's Femme audio, Fatale sweetheart.
It's audio,
listeners.
There's no video, sweetums.
And I'm just waking up. No, I'm just kidding. Here I am.
Eggs and bakey. Yeah, now, I understand that you had to cover the VMAs last night.
I did.
And you wanted to say something about Miley Cyrus?
Is that what you wanted to do? She ruined my summer jam.
She ruined Blurred Lines?
I was having fun with Blurred Lines.
You were having fun with all that
rapiness,
all that quasi-rape stuff was just so sexy to you.
And all of a sudden she comes out in latex and sticking that foam finger here and there and grinding up against teddy bears, and it's just, no.
So now the rape isn't fun anymore,
No, it's not.
You didn't like it, I take it.
Not her performance.
And what was it about her performance that disappointed you?
Vulgar. Just unnecessarily vulgar.
Now, let me ask you this. Madonna, back during her Blonde Ambition tour, simulated masturbation on stage. Why are you clutching pearls at this?
Because Madonna was so... She was unique. She was the first to do whatever it was that she did on
stage.
Have
you ever seen a 19 to 20-year-old child pseudo-masturbating with a foam finger before?
No.
So she was the first?
No, but I still remember, like, Justify My Love with mm-hmm. Madonna.
Yeah, yeah.
How that was banned from MTV.
Yeah.
Miley is just, it's no longer cool to do something so sexually overt. It's almost like you're watching her fall apart.
So it wasn't interesting.
No.
It's not that it was too vulgar.
It's pathetic.
It wasn't the vulgarity. It was that it was boring. Is that what you're saying?
Boring, I guess.
Or just overdone?
Just overdone. That is exactly it.
Desperate. I mean, my big question for her wasn't, why is a 20-year-old doing those, like, grinding up on a guy old enough to be her very, very attentive uncle? It was, I just thought that the performance was desperate.
You hit the nail on the head. It's desperate.
I don't clutch pearls because she was in a nude bikini. I don't clutch pearls because she was pseudo-masturbating, because that's been going on now for 20 years. What bothers me is that she didn't pull it off.
Like, she did not.
You really need to be a star on stage if you're working with nothing but props that look like they have been won at a county fair and a nude bikini. Then you better have charisma.
And she wasn't even singing well. I didn't think her voice sounded good at all.
I don't think anybody's voice sounded good.
Not even Gaga's. Gaga couldn't keep up with her own song.
Well, maybe just stop taking off your clothes and putting it back on.
I know.
Put it on twice. That's fine.
One wig is fine.
We like your wig. You don't need to do anything with the wig.
She looked like a toad in the hole at first. Is that what you call it when the egg is in the toes?
Well, because she had her head in a big square. Before we go to our VIP question, I will say that reminded me when her head came out in a big white square. If you are a fan of Doctor Who, and Lady Cassandra is who that reminded me of, which is the last human in the universe at one point in time, and she's nothing but a big piece of skin with a face. I'll link to it. in my push post for this podcast. It's the only thing I thought of when she came out. I thought, oh my God, it's Lady Cassandra. Okay, that's enough for the nerds. Let's get to the VIP question. Recently, we have seen a lot of leaks coming out of the music industry. Thanks to a leaker, we heard Katy Perry's roar before we were technically supposed to. That apparently got her really upset because, see, she's a lion now and she's got the eye of the tiger, and us discovering that state secret 2 days ahead of time, it just ruined everything. It just ruined everything. And another recent leak, Gaga's single called Applause. That song was also leaked early and reportedly made Lady Gaga very angry. If things had gone according to plan, Gaga would just have debuted the song and she would have gotten to properly shock us with this revelation that she's in this business for attention. Yeah. So occasionally an artist or a label will leak something deliberately, but not so often as you might think. I found that out. I thought that most of these leaks were deliberate. Yeah, they're not.
A PR spin.
Yeah, I was wrong. Most of the time, a leak is not planned, and it happens a lot more than you think it does. How often? And what exactly do leakers want anyway? I found out for you, courtesy of Ralph Echemendia, who hunts hackers and leakers for a living. I tracked him down earlier this week. Ralph Echemendia, a security consultant specializing in hacks, leaks, and other security woes for the entertainment industry, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course, thank you. Let me get to my reader question. Matthew K. asks via Facebook, new singles from both Katy Perry and Lady Gaga have leaked, and we hear about it happening with music artists all the time. How exactly does something leak? Where is it leaking from and who's leaking? And how can't artists or labels figure out a way to stop this from happening? So, my first question for you is, let's talk about how the leaks happen. You've told me that most hackers hack a person, not a server. What does that mean?
Well, when it comes to targeted attacks such as these, they're going after somebody who neither works with Lady Gaga or Katy Perry, as an example. You know, a manager, an engineer, you know, there's literally, in a lot of cases, hundreds of people involved with an artist's career. And what they do is they go after these people, usually through spear phishing attacks. That's one of the terms that we use, which is sending an email that looks like it's from someone you know, or from a service provider like a phone company or whatever. Someone you would read the message and potentially click on a link. And then that's all it would take. Once you get to the link, then the person sitting on that computer would be compromised and everything that they have on their computer could be seen by the attacker.
I see. So basically, it's a matter of tricking the user into clicking.
Right. That's why I say, you know, they're targeting the person, not the computer, if you will.
And is there a particular place that's vulnerable along the chain, the creative chain? Like, for example, you send it files, Dropbox files, emails.
Well, absolutely. The issue is that companies have IT departments. But most of the people involved in the production chain of music or film or anything creative like that, they don't. They typically work off of their personal laptops using personal email addresses, such as their Gmails or Yahoos or whatever. And so when they get targeted and they get hacked, they're basically typically primarily going after their email address. Once they get into their email address, then the use of things like YouSendIt or Dropbox or any number of different cloud-based file sharing services, getting access to those files is usually inside of their email, because, you know, typically if we go to a website and say we forgot our email, what happens? It sends you an email.
Right.
If you say you forgot your password.
Right.
So getting access to the email account itself and being able to read all the content in the email box allows them pretty much access to everything else.
And is there any way to find out sort of where most of these songs are being typically taken from once the victim has their email and all their passwords hacked? Are they taking it from YouSendIt or Dropbox? Are they taking it from somewhere else?
In some cases, in a lot of cases, they are taking it from services like YouSendIt and such. But in some cases, it's actually been right off of the person's computer, like an engineer or a manager who had access to the songs, who had already downloaded the song, if you will.
Mm-hmm. So when it comes to making a song, you've got the artist, you've got management, you've got the engineers, the producers, the musicians, the people who are sweetening it in post, the marketers, the labels, everybody. Is there any group that you've seen that's particularly naive and particularly vulnerable to getting hacked or seems to be hacked more often?
Well, unfortunately, that is the people who are closest to the artist and the artist themselves.
The artist themselves.
Yeah, the artist themselves and the people who are very close to the artist, be that the management and agents and such, because they typically have the most information, but very rarely do they have, like I said, some sort of IT security department looking out for them. They don't really have that. So generally speaking, you know, you go into a studio environment and you will find many computers in that studio that are connected to the internet and have direct access to the hard drives that store the music. So a lot of those folks are the ones that usually will be the first to fall for these type of scams. And then, you know, again, the other 100 people involved in the chain are not as important because they have less access to the content.
How often have you seen the artist, his or herself, him or herself, be hacked?
Pretty often. You know, I think you'd be surprised to how often the artists themselves get hacked. And interestingly enough, the artists getting hacked typically starts as an attack of you know, of opportunity. In other words, it wasn't a spear phishing attack, or it wasn't a direct type of attack. It was because they stumbled upon the artist. You know, as you can imagine, Lady Gaga's email address is not ladygaga@aol.com.
Right.
So they stumble upon the artist in a much larger campaign of what we call targets of opportunity, and once they get into their accounts, they've fallen for it. They don't really know at first who the artist, that this is the artist or that this is the artist manager. They just start getting into their account, looking through the context of their messages, and then they figure out that this happens to be Lady Gaga, as an example.
So what do? They set up some sort of phishing thing that just targets a whole bunch of people associated with, say, a label or a management company, and then ding, that Lady Gaga they got?
Exactly.
Okay.
For example, they'll send, you know, 10,000 emails of the same phishing attack to every email address at, say, at universalmusic.com or at, you know, warner.com or whatever. And then some people fall for them there. But again, a lot of these artists are not necessarily using an account that's at Universal or at Warner Brothers. In other words, not with that domain name. They're using an AOL or Gmail account.
Right.
So they just get how they gathered the emails that they mass fish, if you will. There's a lot of different ways, but ultimately they end up with, you know, access to neither the artist account or the management.
So a hacker could be doing just a random phishing expedition for suckers on Gmail and randomly hit the jackpot with Katy Perry.
Absolutely. That's happened many times.
Okay. So how often does a phishing tactic like this work?
Phishing attacks in the music industry happen literally every day. So that's just one mechanism is, like I said, spear phishing or phishing in general.
Mm-hmm.
The other mechanism or the other mechanisms, as you get more into the targeted attacks, have to do with an email attack, which is like a phishing attack. The only difference is you'll end up at a link or a website that instead of them prompting you for your password or prompting you for a username and password, just the fact that you got to that URL, to that website, is already executing malicious code on your computer. So it doesn't even require you to actually input your username and password. You're already, as we say, owned in the hacking world the moment you land at that page, because the page itself has malicious code that allows them to get into your computer.
Okay, so how often a month, those attacks happen every day, how often per month are they successful and we get a jackpot?
Well, that's something that's not as public, as you can imagine. In fact, the majority of these cases are handled very, very privately for a number of different reasons, so that they don't get out to the general public that this has happened. Or they try to, in other words, handle it in such a way where it's not shared with the public. So publicly, you're only going to hear about these like Lady Gaga and Katy Perry. And, you know, this has happened with Sony's catalog that included a bunch of Michael Jackson stuff. This has happened with, you know, Eminem. This has happened with a number of artists, okay, across the board, different genres, you name it. But the times you hear about it is when it's already kind of already viral online. I'd say it probably happens, you know, this is kind of on a generality. It probably happens as often as, you know, once every few weeks, that someone in this chain of content access gets neither phished or gets hacked. Another means that this happens, which is even more targeted, is, you know, a hacker will go to, say, you know, you can easily find the physical location of, say, a management company or a record label, right? Mm-hmm. You can look that up easy online. You go out to, this has happened also as well, you go out to their facility, go out to the parking lot, and drop a number of USB sticks on top or on the, you know, right below the car, or, you know, like if you dropped a USB stick. Very interesting study came out that had to do more with, you know, on the government side of things, but where, you know, they did this with 100 USB sticks. Out of that 100 USB sticks, 60 of them were plugged into their computers, and that's all it took to infect the computer.
So wait a minute. That's like eating a French fry that you find on the ground.
Literally, because people are going to wonder what's on it. So they find a USB stick on the ground, and the first thing they do is plug it into their computer to see what's on it.
And then that's all it takes for me to know what's on your computer.
Exactly.
Oh, my God. And so you've told me that hackers and leakers are often different people. So let's get to the leakers and what the leakers want. You told me a story about the hip-hop world last time we talked. Do you remember what that story?
Yep.
Why don't you retell that story for my readers?
So there's been,
my
there's
listeners.
Been, there's been a number of cases, not only, like I said, in all different genres. So not only in hip-hop, this has even happened in country and other genres of music as well, where you have basically a crazy fan. And the crazy fan isn't necessarily going to be a hacker, but the crazy fan will be a leaker. So in this one situation, they basically were, for the most part, hiring hackers to do the hacking, but they wanted to be the ones leaking. And at the end of it, when they, you know, we obviously established some communications with this individual, you know, it would be something as simple as, well, you know, if I get an autographed picture, I'll stop doing it. Or, you know, if I get, you know, an autographed something, if I get something that, because at the end of the day, what happens is the fan wants to be closer to the artist. They want to feel that they're closer and in relation in some way with the artist. And so this is, it's a very psychological issue there. And so in this case, the leaker wasn't necessarily the hacker. And all he really wanted at the end of the day wasn't money. In this case, it was just an autographed picture or an autographed CD.
Of a hip-hop artist?
In this case, it was a hip-hop artist, yeah.
And what happened to this would-be leaker?
The would-be leaker, it was this is a global issue. So the leaker was in a country that we couldn't really do too much about. So there were steps taken to get him to stop, but there was no way to necessarily bring legal action against him. And this, of course, included, you know, international law enforcement community to be able to get this to stop.
Now, there's another story you told me with the number $150,000 attached to it. Do you want to tell that story also to my listeners?
That was a more recent situation where, you know, you had a basically somebody access intellectual property, entertainment content, and then basically contact the executive or one of the executives at this organization and say, you know, we're going to leak this in its entirety if you don't give us $150,000.
And the leaker had what, two songs out of an album or something?
Yeah, they had a couple of tracks that they were, or they claimed to have a couple of tracks, and they were saying, hey, if we don't give us this money, we're going to leak it. And, you know, the way they proved that is by sending a piece of one of those tracks.
And when they send a piece of one track, is that necessarily proof that they've got the whole album? I mean, that's not really proof of life if it were a kidnapping.
Exactly. It's not. But it creates quite a situation for, as you can imagine, for the label or the intellectual property holder in this case. So what do you do? Do you go down the route of even entertaining paying $150,000 so that they won't leak it? Or, you know, do you really go after them and make them think that's what you're doing, which is typically what happens is they'll lead on the leaker or hacker that they are doing what the leaker or hacker wants them to do while an investigation ensues.
And how did this one end up?
In this one, we got to the hacker. In this case, it wasn't just a leaker. This was the hacker, and we got to the hacker. We knocked on their door and, you know, took them into custody for copyright violations.
Interesting. why isn't this being cracked down on more?
Well, first of all, I think it's an issue of resources. Like I said, a lot of these entertainment brands don't really have as many resources focused in the production area. In other words, you'll be surprised that very few people ever walk into a studio or a set or a post-production office that are really IT security people, or for that matter, that any IT security technologies are deployed in those environments. It's usually very, very minimal. So what happens too is that in a case of a breach like this, there's very little evidence. I've had situations where the user that was hacked deleted his Gmail account after he got hacked. Well, there goes all my evidence, and then you're spending months in going the legal route to subpoena this type of information. And then hence it takes months before you hear about it in the public domain, if you even do.
Final question. Have you ever had a client actually hand over money or whatever it is that a leaker wants in exchange for halting a leak?
Very few situations, and it wasn't a matter of handing over all of the money, but handing over some money only to get us closer to who that person may be. Because at the end of the day, that's the trickiest part about all this, is that everything else may happen in cyberspace, but not the money, because we're talking about cash in most instances. So, you know, leave a bag on the corner of Hollywood and Highland. There are cameras on Hollywood and Highland, and there could be people in a million different places on Hollywood and Highland. So once somebody physically shows up to grab that bag, then you're going to follow that person, right? So those have been the cases that are where there has been some money put in a bag, if you will.
You can't even give me any hints about who asked about what album triggered the $150,000.
I can't. That would be unethical.
Genre?
It was also a hip-hop player, so.
All right. Ralph Etchemendia, I can't thank you enough for doing this.
Oh, my pleasure. Glad to be on again. Thank you.
Stay secure. And we're back. Kelly, it's time to shine.
It is.
Ask the next listener question.
Francis asks via the Femme Fatale website, bad or insufficient marketing is one of the things being blamed for Pacific Rim's poor opening. Why would a studio spend $185 million on a movie and then hold back on the marketing budget?
Did you see that movie?
I didn't. I skipped it.
I've never seen a movie that uses like a boat as a weapon before, like clocking somebody. A giant robot clocks an alien with a boat. Never saw that before.
Did it succeed?
It did and it didn't. Okay, this is the deal. Pacific Rim opened just under $40 million on its opening weekend. Mm-hmm. Lifetime gross so far domestic, $100 million. Cost about $190 million to make. So, owie, right?
Yep.
However, foreign sales already for this movie, almost $300 million alone. So this film did not do well initially stateside. But it is making its money back without a problem. So yes, poor domestic opening, but keep those numbers in mind. Yep. First thing you ought to know. Because look, they're giant robots. Of course the Japanese are going to like it. You can always count on the Japanese to like a giant freaking robot. Now, second, it is a myth that studios pay the same amount on marketing as they do on a production budget. This is a big myth. Have you heard this before, that if a studio spends $190 million on a film, they'll spend another $190 million on marketing?
No, I haven't, but I'm interested to learn about
this. That's this industry sort of rule that you keep hearing over and over again. Double the production budget and you have the entire cost for the movie, including marketing.
Disney's John Carter comes to mind when you say that.
Okay, well, sometimes so. Yes, sometimes that happens.
Yep.
But not so often as you might think. One expert I interviewed to answer this question is film marketer Jerome Korshan, who teaches a whole course on it called Secrets to Distribution. And I believe you can see his work at distribution.la. He thinks that they may have spent about $80 million to market this movie. And that's about the industry standard, because it was not the ace in the whole tent pole like a franchise is. where if you spend $100 million in marketing, there's a difference. Like for a movie where you're not it's not guaranteed money back, mm-hmm. you may spend less in marketing, even if it's an mm-hmm. expensive movie. If that $185 million to $190 million movie had been a Superman movie or a guaranteed $1 billion franchise.
Like Iron Man?
Yes. They would have spent more on marketing than $80 million. Okay. But it's an estimated $80 million that they spent okay. on Pacific Rim. That is considered plenty, though, to market this kind of movie. If you don't know how to market a movie, any kind of movie, with $80 million, get another job. What's being said about the marketing of this movie isn't that they didn't spend enough on marketing. Not that the marketing was insufficient, but that they didn't target their fancy, expensive marketing correctly. Everybody is saying that, and that has nothing to do with how much you spend. First of all, they spent money to put out a graphic novel. When was the last time you, quick, off the top of your head, Kelly, when was the last time you read a graphic novel? Quickly.
See, I can only think of coloring books that I used to color when we went to dinner with my parents.
I don't count that. What age were you?
I think it was last November.
You're no help. I will tell you.
Count me out when it comes to graphic novels
are not a cash cow industry.
Well, then why did they do that?
Because they thought that it would help build momentum for the movie. They put out, just before the movie came out, they put out a prequel story
okay.
in graphic novel form because they thought, oh, you know, this is for comic book nerds, and so we'll put out a graphic novel. What these people don't realize is that door-to-door Bible sales are probably higher than graphic novels. I know this because my man has written graphic novels, and we don't still have our house paid off. So I know this. I could have told them this. I could have said, this is the size of my mortgage, and my man has written graphic novels. Ergo, pick something else. And you don't even need to pay me $80 million, but no. Also, the trailers for this movie were all wrong. You're nodding your head.
I didn't even know that Charlie Day, who I find so funny, is in the movie. I had no clue because it was all taken over by robots.
Yeah. You like the Charlie Day?
He's the one from Horrible Bosses and It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia,
he's
right?
He's the lead?
He's just so funny.
Is he the lead in this movie?
I don't know.
He's the one that, because to me, he's interchangeable.
I think the robots are the lead.
Oh, no, Charlie Day is one of the 80s style scientists. That's
Excuse
right.
Me,
Thank
yes.
you, sound man. Now, one movie marketing source tells me that what can happen with a movie like Pacific Rim, which is part sci-fi, part action blockbuster, that there may be some uncertainty about whom to target. Do you target sci-fi people? Do you target action people? What do you do? Believe it or not, that is actually confusing to a movie marketer. That can result in crappy trailers, which is exactly what a lot of people say happened here. As Kershon puts it, the trailer didn't tell me, this is what he said to me, the trailer didn't tell me anything about the story other than giant robots fighting Godzilla-like creatures and Idris Elba saying that we are canceling the apocalypse. But other than hearing him say we are canceling the apocalypse, you wouldn't even know that there was an apocalypse. You wouldn't know that there's an end of the world happening. Mm-hmm. There's no hint of a giant ongoing war or two crazy scientists that you might like or any other aspect of story at all. I mean, Bern Gorman was the other scientist in that movie. I'm a Bern Gorman fan. And maybe I would have liked to have known that. Mm-hmm. But nay. I didn't even know there were scientists in the damn movie until I saw it.
I just saw robots.
Just robots.
And Charlie Day.
Oh, you didn't see Charlie Day in the actual...
I didn't. I just read IMDb.
Right?
And someone told me he was in it. And I said, Charlie Day is in the movie about robots?
But I guess you would have... See, if you had known that, would you have gone to see it if you knew that Charlie Day was in it?
I think so, because I want to see if he's funny or not.
See? Somebody didn't properly market to you.
No.
$80 million and they somehow missed you. This is what I'm talking about. That said... Critics liked the movie overall. It got a 72% on Rotten Tomatoes, but Kershon points out something else that's really important here. The second weekend this movie was out, its box office domestic dropped precipitously to about $16 million. And that really, really usually is not a result of bad or cheap or insufficient marketing. That usually can only be blamed on bad word of mouth or not enough quadrants bonding with a film. For example, what quadrants did not bond with the film? Me, the Leslie quadrant. Mm-hmm. I thought the film was way too broed out for me. We didn't even see a woman for the entire first act of the movie. It's as if it was World War II all over again, but there wasn't even a Rosie the Riveter anywhere, and that didn't feel viable to me. Giant robots, walloping aliens, fine. I will suspend my disbelief for that. But unless the aliens also have eaten 50% of the population, I draw my line, sister. So I did not recommend it to my friends partially for that reason. I also thought the lead guy was interchangeable with Garrett Hedlund. Couldn't tell them apart.
Garrett Hedlund was in it?
No, but well, he may as well have been in it.
Excuse me, I have to get to a theater.
It's all that same mold of guy.
Yeah.
The acting was uneven and the story wasn't all that tight, and that's what a lot of other people thought too. So yes, bad or insufficient marketing may be at fault for some of the weak domestic box office here, but not nearly as much as you might think.
Mm-hmm.
Was that sufficient? That was probably more sufficient than the collective marketing for that movie.
And perhaps the DVD will do well.
Perhaps. I bet you it will. I'll bet you that, and I bet you they were betting on that too.
Yep.
Next question, Kelly, from the form.
Now, forgive me if I pronounce this name wrong.
Go ahead.
Tete de Bite?
What?
Asks via the Femme Fatale comment form. With such tough competition with Marvel, why would DC choose Affleck? Did they learn nothing from Green Lantern and Daredevil? And Kyle R. from Facebook asks, with all the negative responses Ben Affleck has received for his upcoming portrayal of the Batman in the new Superman movie, do you think he is in danger of being recast? How many other actors in another movie received as much hate as Mr. Garner? LOL.
Sound man, how much time have we got for this? Because I could drill deep. Okay, just a tiny bit. Very quickly, I will tell you that Bonnie Gillespie, my casting director friend, really batted this one out of the park. Two things you ought to know. One, they're not going to recast him. That rarely, if ever, happens. Usually you have to screw up first before you get recast. He hasn't screwed up.
And that would be weird.
It would be weird. Secondly, the director himself wanted him. Zack Snyder wanted him. It wasn't like some producer imposed him on someone. So there's not a large chance that we're going to see disharmony. And thirdly, we're talking about it.
Yes.
We are talking about this movie before a single frame has been shot. And Bonnie says, mission accomplished.
Yep.
That's part of the reason why they did it. First of all, he does good work. He does better work than you think he does.
He has an amazing jawline.
Okay.
That does it for me. Superhero.
Yeah, if that's all it takes for you, good for you, sweetheart. We'll see you at the movie theater. But the other thing to consider is everybody's going to show up to see if it's going to be a shit show. And that's part of the attention that's going to go into this movie is, will he bomb or will he not? Because he's done it twice before. What were these people thinking?
Yep.
It's a lot for the same reason. This is what Bonnie said. The people tuned into the Lindsay Lohan-Oprah interview. They're going to, if it's a success, everybody's going to be talking about it. If it's not a success, everybody's going to be talking about it. So you know what? They've already won. They haven't even started spending their money yet.
He's going to look good in that suit.
And everybody's a sucker.
Yep.
So done. End of discussion. That's it for this week. We are dark next week for Labor Day, but I will be back and toiling in your name the week after that. If you guys want to find me, you can. I'm gonna let myself do this because it's Labor Day. I'm going to give you time off. Are you ready? Here's how to reach me. You can email me at leslie@thefamefatale.com. We also have a lovely comment form at www.thefamefatale.com where you can reach me anytime, or you can tweet me at FameFatale Says. If you prefer Facebook, I'm on there too. In the meantime, hang in there. I'll get you truth soon enough. See you in 2 weeks.